Over the past few months, author Joanna Walsh has been writing a series for us about amateurism and what that faintly quaint-sounding approach to creativity could mean in the world of user-generated content, of endless self-exposure and self-exploitation for clicks. In this final essay, she reaches the death of Twitter, which, as she recounts, was not the result of a slow decline, but of a moment in the markets.
Twitter's death day was the 14th of April 2022, when Elon Musk bought the platform. It had been on the cards for some time, but it took him a while to trash what over a decade of amateur input had created by charging for views. Unlike most Web 2.0 sites, he didn't only charge advertisers, but began to charge users. If April 22 was Twitter's death day, its funeral took years. There was a time it was difficult to keep off Twitter, when friends had to wean themselves off its mix of car crash narcissism, FOMO, righteous bigotry, clicktivism, shamers and reply guys. Only a few years ago, a friend tweeted, "I haven't thought about Twitter in 48 hours. Seems like progress. We're still there, most of us, but it's not working for us anymore, even though we're working for it. When I go on Twitter now, I don't get response, interaction. I don't see the people who interest me. I see people who paid to be there, tweeting things that keep them visible. It's like speaking to an empty room, which is somehow also full. Or rather, it's exactly like being offline, where who gets heard and whose work gets seen depends less on what they're doing than who already has money and power. Aesthetics won't get you anywhere anymore." Twitter is a paradigm for other platforms. As they become what Cory Doctorow called enshittified, is it any wonder that users expect more for their work than just likes? Tailoring their output, they second-guess the platform's requirements to win visibility and with its sponsors. Artists are back in the age of the patron. But users who bemoan Twitter's demise are still there. Where else is there to go? I went over to Blue Sky and found it was like Twitter in the early 2010s. Twitter pre-Trump, pre-outrage. People swapped recipes, posted pictures of flowers, were openly grateful that Blue Sky was like the old Twitter. Like them, at first I thought, this must be paradise. Then I found I didn't want old Twitter anymore. I wanted a social platform where something was at stake. That's because Twitter has formed my writing and my politics, as aesthetics and politics are never not linked. And that's something it taught me too. Twitter taught me to be entertaining. It taught me to be smart. How to move someone, how to make them laugh in 140, then 280 characters. It taught me how to make my point playfully and sharply, how to combine an image with a phrase in a way that causes the gap of meaning to mean more than either component. On Twitter, more than anywhere else, politics are aesthetics and aesthetics are political, from Trump's crowd-pulling gramophiles to hashtag activism, Black Lives Matter, Me Too. On Twitter, the joke is a political mode. Confession is a political mode, so is outrage, so are memes. They're political not only in content, but because they're there in this open forum. Political because so many of them come from people who never had a voice in any public forum before. At the same time, the political via the aesthetic is personal, because these aesthetic interfaces have also become templates for how we argue, flirt, parent, find friends, get work. They're how we've learned to relate to each other. In losing Twitter, I lost a dimension of how to be social. The age of the amateur is over, and this is partly the amateur's fault, or the fault of some amateurs, because not all amateurism is the same. The amateur ethos of Web 2.0 has gone two ways. There are people who wanted information to be free, and there are people who wanted free information so they could profit from it. Musk's Twitter relies ironically on amateurs, since he replaced the content moderation team with the crowd-sourced fact-checking system, Community Notes. Can amateurs fight back? In April 2023, Reddit users staged a blackout when their CEO announced that the site would charter its API, selling data scraped from user contributions, all those memes and jokes, all those posts that developed our styles of interaction, all those pieces of contemporary art, to companies that included AI developers, but also those making third-party apps crucial to the functioning of the site. Volunteer moderators responded by making subreddits private or incorrectly labelling them not safe for work, causing a collapse in advertising revenue. There were more creative protests. Fashion Reddits restricted posts to modes of the 1700s. A subreddit for the video game distributor Steam posted only about literal Steam. Reddit responded by exempting non-commercial apps from fees, but dissatisfied mods still resigned, a protest that debilitated communities they defended. 3 months ago, Hacker News described the situation as still at stalemate. Researchers at Northwestern University, Illinois, have valued the free work moderators do at $3.4 million per year. Reddit is a community of users who are also creators. The offline creative world still mostly relies on the idea of a single creator, separating inspiration and perspiration, creating a division of labour in which only the named artist gets the credit. To include all the people involved in any work of art could take a longer roll of credits than a film. It might fundamentally change what we talk about when we talk about art and when we talk about an artist. It could make art, as we presently understand it, impossible. Maybe it's about time. If it is, we're going to have to give up some dearly cherished dreams, not only of art as profitable for the named creator, something that has already been eroded for all but the very few, but the status of the artist as professional. The artist is a touch paper for professionalism because they've almost always been partly amateur, precarious, working other jobs to support their practice, no holidays, no sick pay, but also amateur because they're working at what they love. Working outside formal structures, attempting often to break hierarchies, to found creative networks based on something other than professional gatekeeping and pay. How are artists to make a living? If art is the canary in the digital mine, the case of online aesthetics is a paradigm for all professions. How is anyone going to make a living? Now so many traditional professions have been amateurized. Now that heavily aestheticized online side hustles sometimes seem like all we've got. How will our work, offline or on, be credited or paid? How can global companies profiting cross-border from our unpaid creations be legislated for or taxed? These huge questions have been opened up by amateur aesthetics online, and they're questions worth asking. Addressing them is key to the future not only of artists, but everyone.
That was Joanna Walsh there on amateurism, and you can find all the previous essays via the Lyrics site or by subscribing to the Culture File podcast feed.